I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Hollywood Beauty Salon is a film about making a film about a beauty pageant featuring a beauty parlor where people with mental health challenges go for a haircut and a place where they can be themselves, where they can be heard and feel safe enough to tell their stories. The salon is housed inside a mental health facility in Philadelphia, the Germantown Recovery Community, part of NHS Human Services. It's run by our guest, Rachel Hollywood Carr Timms, who shares her moving personal story in the documentary and is a calm and reassuring presence for her clients. Rachel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning to you. Also featured in the film is our guest, Darlene Holmes Malone, whose honesty and courage will touch you deeply. Darlene, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And our third guest, Glenn Holston, is the director of the film that the Philadelphia Inquirer called Witty and Joyful. Glenn used to work at WHYY. He's now a freelance filmmaker. And Glenn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Super to be here.
Here's a scene from the film where Rachel tells us about the salon's philosophy. Let's give it a listen.
Hollywood Beauty came about because when we first opened up Germantown Recovery Community, we talked about things that would help members. Sometimes in our illness, we lost our way of not even knowing how to do basic things like maybe comb and wash and blow dry your hair. A lot of the members first focused on themselves with learning those skills, and then they turned around and became volunteers to help other people.
Oh, yes, I like that.
We don't particularly go into the shop and talk about depression while we're doing hair and nails, but those conversations come about. Life happens, and you never know what road you may go down.
I'm interested, Rachel, why you wanted to make this film, why you wanted to be part of this project.
Well, to start, it wasn't like I knew how it was going to be.
Right.
It was kind of like fate, and it was like, let it happen how it was going to happen. When I was asked, I was like, okay, it was fear, it was, you know, of the unknown, but it actually wound up being a beautiful thing, so I don't regret the decision that I made.
Well, I want to pick up on that. How about for you, Darlene? You're featured in this film.
Yes.
Why did you want to do it?
I wanted to share my story. I wanted to give individuals encouragement and hope to let them know it is possible.
Were you nervous?
Sometimes, but I, you know, worked through it.
Well, Glenn, this was a multi-year project. Mm-hmm. What about a four-year project from start to finish?
Yeah.
What got you interested in this beauty parlor? How did you even find it?
Well, I was, you know, as a freelance filmmaker, you do what I call the passion projects and the rent projects.
Right.
And one of the rent projects was actually commissioned to do a video for NHS Human Services for their a fundraising tape for their foundation. So I went to this office in Germantown and I filmed the other wonderful things they do, which is art therapy and music therapy, all things that I enjoyed. And then they said, we have a little beauty parlor. Would you like to go see it? And I said, sure, we're here with the crew, let's go. And I went in, and it is a little beauty parlor. It's tiny. But on that day, Rachel was doing Sonetta's hair. Rachel's nickname is Hollywood, and Sonetta's nickname is Butterfly. And I thought, heck, I met a woman named Hollywood and a woman named Butterfly. This is interesting.
What could go wrong here, right?
But, you know, more importantly, Rachel spoke just as you heard on that tape about the mission of the salon. And I just found it was a wonderful world. And frankly, it was a world I wanted to be connected to. I wanted to grow from it. So I remember standing out in the parking lot that day with the crew saying, I'm coming back. And we did over and over.
One of the things you say in the film, Rachel, is that you want that it's about bringing out the Hollywood in people. You were called Hollywood as a kid growing up, right?
It was always little things. It wasn't like I always walked around with makeup or was high fashion because I didn't have any money. But it was always like the little things like keeping your nails done or, you know, maybe taking extra care and taking care of yourself that I always, like, wanted to do, you know, despite of anything else, because I know it made me feel better, despite of what I was facing.
Well, and how did you start this beauty salon? How did that happen?
Well, it was like an ideal. It actually started before we actually moved to the building that we're in now. We were around the corner at one of NHS's other locations, 5429, and we actually had a makeshift area in the utility closet type setup where it was like a sink with a hose. It was clean, but it wasn't like a beauty salon. We were back there and we started doing hair, and all the staff had donated curling irons, and it was like we started like helping people look better. And my head had started off like, oh, well, John needs a haircut. He got an interview. And then it just became, You know, I had the ideal of a beauty salon, and my director of the program, Tessa Kresge, she, when we moved to Armand Street location, she built the beauty shop.
And how many sinks, how many chairs, how many people
it's
can
It's only two chairs and one sink, and it seems like no matter how small it is, we all find a way to fit in and help each other.
It looks like a really cozy place. I'm curious, Darlene, how you ended up at this salon.
One day I was in one of the multi-purpose rooms, and it was bigger and crowded, and my anxiety was sitting in it because I don't like crowds. Rachel saw what was going on with me, and she saw that I like makeup and glam and all that, and she said, come down to the beauty shop with me. It's not as busy going on, because I wouldn't stay all day. I would leave.
Just got too anxious?
Yes, and I would run home. And she put me down to the beauty shop with it, and I never left. I fell in love because I do like makeup. I do like fashion and all that, so... And I found my spot.
And clearly it's a place where people feel safe. And I have to say to you, Rachel, that you have this amazing ability to perhaps, as Darlene said, to see things in people and also to make them feel
comfortable. Everybody that got me has something beautiful about them. It's up to us as human beings to see it and to recognize it, or to help our members at Germantown Recovery Community see. And sometimes it's something small that can ignite. It takes a small little light to ignite a fire, right?
Right.
To start off, you know, with something small. And there we help our members create their own goals. So it's not about the things that we want to do. It's about what they want to do. And I think that has a big part in, you know, it's people who want to come learn how to get themselves a manicure. It's people who want to go to cosmetology school. So those are two extreme ends of the scale, but
sure.
Where we meet people where they're at, and I think that's what makes our program unique and different.
But it's so much more than that. I mean, Glenn, that's the thing that really comes across, which is, yeah, you can, I mean, it's wonderful to have your hair cut and colored and done and get a shave, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah, it's community. I mean, it's a place, as you said, a safe space, and it's also... I found it to be a very creative space. I mean, when we started, we just had workshops. We didn't really know what kind of movie we wanted to make. I had just done another film that was in the world of mental health, and I found it very exciting to sort of match film with this intense experience that people had living through. So I just came and I came up with the idea, I think, every Tuesday for – it was supposed to be 6 weeks. It ended up being like 20 weeks.
What, because people can talk?
We just started off saying, you know, what would you like to do? What are your stories? What are things we like? And it just bubbled up from there.
Well, in fact, because you were also featured in this film, Glenn, one of the things you say to this group of clients, which is, what is your first memory? And that seems like that's an important question that you think helps to make a film. Why?
Well, I learned that when I was working here at WHYY. I was working on a series I don't know where I heard it from, but it brings up a lot of conversation. In fact, I bring that up at social events when with people in conversation lags. I say something, you know, that works to make things go. But in this particular scenario, actually, that was a learning curve for me because people's early memories were so intense. And so I realized that I'm not a mental health worker. I don't really know how to, you know, guide people through. If I trigger something, you know, I wanted support. So that became sort of thesis of the film when we all went to each other's filming. So if Darlene had a filming scene in West Philadelphia, the entire beauty salon, we got them there. And
That's great.
When Rachel filmed, we see Sinead at the end flying as Butterfly. Everybody comes to every scene. So if during the filming there should be something that happens that would trigger somebody, and I wouldn't really know how to necessarily handle it, I would turn to Rachel, who's very skilled at working with human beings.
At working with human beings, which is what we all are, right? But we do see people cry. I mean, it is a witty and in many ways fun and in many ways a happy film. But we do, Rachel, we see people cry. And frankly, as I watched the film, there were moments where I also cried and had tears in my eyes because these are painful stories to hear.
Yes, and it's I don't have people who – I've never been in a situation where somebody just came and just dumped. Like, oh, my God, I've been through all this in my life. Just dump it in my lap. It's rare that that happens. So a lot of relationship building happens at Germantown Recovery Community. The members are assigned a recovery guy, and we're intense in different people's lives, from the littlest things to the biggest things you could think of. We're helping them trying to get better. Our goal is not to keep you there for years and have you sitting in groups. It's to get you where you want to be and get you going. You can come back and visit. You know, we want to rehabilitate the community. and we want people to feel like it's a place where they can feel welcomed in. It's a very good program. It offers a lot of different things, that, and a lot of people who came to the Beauty Salon participate in everything. Different things, art, music. Some people don't like none of it. They just come to the groups, or right. The Beauty Salon had evolved into started to train their, like Darlene would train her peers on how to do nails and manicures. You know, just basic care. It never was supposed to be like a beauty salon. We was like providing services. It was really for self-help and self-care and taking care of me. And it wound up being like actually a rehabilitation and vocational thing, because members are learning skills and using it for themselves and other people.
What was it like to get your first, what, hair wash, hair cut, hair style at this salon, Darlene?
It was different because I'm always doing it myself. So to let someone take care of me was opening. Like, you ain't always got to do it yourself. Let somebody else take care of you for a change. And that's what we do in the community. Quote, Rachel's the one with the title, but we all take care of each other. And you'll see that in the movie. Like, different members will have an episode of something going on, and we take care of each other. Crystal has taken care of me. I've taken care of Rashida. I take care of Rachel. I'm actually Rachel's right hand, so we take care of each other.
Well, and what's interesting with what you just said, which is it hard? Was it hard to let other people take care of you?
Yes.
To help you?
Yes, yes.
To what, trust them enough?
Trust and let them in, because through my abuse, I've built a wall up, and I don't let you in there. And even if there is a little crack or a window, it still ain't up. But through years and through learning my skills and my coping skills and all that, the wall is down, the window is open, and I let you in now.
You know, it's interesting. We were talking before going on the air, Glenn, about just, I think for a lot of us who go to have our hair done at a regular place or a local barber shop, it is more than just that haircut and a shave. It really is about a place where people touch you. And oftentimes when people touch you, you can tell them things you might not want to normally tell somebody.
Yeah. You're also passing time together. And then also if you go to the same barber or the same salon keeper, there's a relationship built there. But I feel like what Rachel has created with the community there is like 20 times that. I mean, it's just this warmth there that you go in. And so I was immediately attracted to it. And I immediately wanted to selfishly get more of that. It's a place where there's not a lot of pretense, and there's no layers or masks.
We're almost up on a break. Did you ever do Glenn's hair?
No.
They comment on it, though.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about a film called Hollywood Beauty Salon, and it features two of our guests. There are a number of people featured in this film. Rachel Hollywood Carr-Timms and Darlene Holmes Malone featured in this film. Rachel runs this beauty salon. It's housed inside a mental health facility, and Glenn Holston is the director. I should add that the film is being shown this Sunday at the Acme Screening Room in Lambertville. That's Lambertville, New Jersey. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. More after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about a beauty parlor here in Philadelphia. It operates at a nonprofit mental health facility in the Germantown section, where staff and clients are in the process of recovery from a number of mental illnesses and addiction illnesses. The documentary called Hollywood Beauty Salon. And let me play a scene from this. And this is Darlene, who we've been talking to. How she has prayed to God as a kid about her life and what she wants. Let's give it a listen.
Close your eyes, and why don't you try to give us one of those Dear God conversations, and let's just do a stream of consciousness.
Dear God, it's me, Dee. I wish I could have what my neighbor has. She's riding a bike. I wish I could ride a bike. She has pretty clothes on. She has long, thick, cute ponytails. My ponytails aren't cute, and my hair is too knotty. I wish it was thick like hers and lustrous. She doesn't look hungry, God. She looks clean. Looks like someone gave her a bath. I only get baths when the social worker is coming. Dear God, Why doesn't anybody love me the way the other kids are loved? Why do they tease me? Why do they say I smell? Why do they say I'm ugly? Why do they call me foster child? What is that, God? Dear God, I know it'll be better one day. That's what they tell me. They tell me to trust you. But God, it's hard.
And again, Darlene Holmes Malone, I told you that her part in the film is honest and courage and will touch you deeply. And I have to say, Darlene, even listening to that now, it brings tears to my eyes. The fact that you could say that so honestly and so openly and expose yourself that way. Were there certain things you had to do to get yourself into that place where you felt comfortable enough?
Mr. Glenn helped it with saying close your eyes, because that took me right back to that point. I couldn't have did it with my eyes open. And as you see right just then, I closed my eyes again.
Right.
That takes me exactly right there.
It's painful to hear about your life, especially as a young girl growing up in foster care.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
And talking about it, has that helped you?
Yes, very much. It's very therapeutic. I used to cry. Now I don't anymore. No. Now I see my growth, and, it helps. You know, and it also helps individuals that see the movie. It takes you there, or anyone that has a foster child now, that if you're not properly taking care of that child, it makes you think. Even if you have to give the child back to the state, you weren't really helping the child anyway. It was just a paycheck. So,
There's a scene, and I'll go back to to you, Glenn, and also to you, Rachel. What happens in terms of how you tell your story is you find a young girl to be the young Darlene Holmes Malone, to essentially say those same words, and you listen to her, in a sense, be you.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
It was good. Again, it took me right there. When we were doing it, I was not the full-grown Darlene. Right. I was, quote, the individual. She played the body, but I was still there with her. So I wasn't the full-grown Darlene at the moment. I was that 11-year-old going through it all again.
Yeah, yeah. And let me turn to you, Glenn, and also to you, Rachel. The idea then, for the people that we meet in the film, they get to tell their story in their own way.
Yeah,
some of them, as Darlene, has someone play her as a younger person. Others, it's drawings, as you have for you, Rachel.
Yeah, Darlene came up with that idea, I would say, one of the first weeks of the workshop. There were a couple things that were quite like sparks, where the idea came and then we spent the next 4 years executing them. There were other things where, Rachel had the kernel of her idea. She really wanted to show the story of surviving a domestic violence situation. And her original thought was to do it in kind of a very high-end music video style, which I knew was very expensive, and I wasn't quite sure I had the skills to pull it off. But I did happen to know of this fabulously talented animator, Paul Feerlinger.
Oh, and I thought that was Paul Feerlinger.
Yeah. And I knew that he would be a great match for the depth and the richness of Rachel's story. And Rachel went and met with Paul, and they had an immediate bond. And the result is that fabulous animated sequence where Rachel tells her story of triumph from a very, very dark situation.
Since you mentioned it, Rachel, let me play a clip from the film where you were talking a bit about your life and some of the lessons, I guess, that you have learned as you look back on your life. Let's give that a listen, and then we'll talk about it.
I did have to fight all my life. Everything was like a sad time. Like being in, the placement that I was in foster care, in the group homes, they moved us a lot, around a lot. And I remember being in a group home, and the male staff would touch me and things, and I didn't say nothing to nobody because I felt like that I needed a place to go. One thing I could say about my mom is that she, before she got ill when I was young, she had cancer. And I knew that she loved me, and I knew that she was struggling with her own stuff, so I didn't, blame my mom. I feel like everything that I went through was setting the precedent of me learning a lot of lessons that I did. Learning about trust, learning about self-worth and love. If I didn't go through them things, I don't think that I would have the understanding that I have now. I'd be able to help other people. And that was priceless. So I will go through everything that I went through again just to be able to gain the understanding that I have now. And some people may not never get a chance to live, to understand the way I understand. Even though a lot of the stuff was sad and, you know, I wish that I didn't never have to go through, I wouldn't take it back. It's basically what I'm trying to say. All I really want is to be happy, to find the love that's mine. It would be so sweet. All I really want is to be happy. I remember just always playing this song. Like on a Sunday morning, cleaning my house or my room, I just always loved that song.
It's so powerful to hear you say, because I don't think everyone can come to that conclusion about their life, which is, as tough as it was, I wouldn't take it back. I would even do it again. It's powerful.
Yes, because when anybody who goes through anything is able to get through it, it's a lesson learned, you know, whether you acknowledge it or not, because you're alive and you survive through it. And it also teaches you what not to do again or what you don't want to do. The sad thing about it is when you're a child, you don't have control over certain circumstances. But when you're an adult, you have to choose to live. And it took me a long time, but right now I'm choosing to live. You know, to live does not mean you're alive. It's people walking around who's lifeless, but they're alive. You know, but to really find your purpose and what you want to do, it's like, you know, to really live. You know, I feel like I'm living right now. I made a choice.
To live.
Yes.
And, I mean, you did lose a child, which
yes.
I know at you must have been just such a low point in your life. You also were in an abusive relationship.
Yes, it was like, I don't know, a spiral of time that just bad events happened, even losing somebody who I was dating to street violence. Right. You know, he was killed, and it was the person who I fathered my son Sean with that passed away. It was like the most horrific time of my life. I never felt so worthless. It was one little thing in my that had my heart keep beating, and that was my daughter Cadence. And she, I'm trying to be teary-eyed. She kept me going.
Yeah.
And she was my start of my recovery process, knowing that I was responsible for somebody else's life. It's some serious stuff to me. And I know everything that I've been through, all the hurt and pain, I did not want her to go through the things that I've been through. So I fought real hard, and hearing her and being with her and seeing her was a reminder every day. You got to do this right because you don't want her to go through the things that you've been through.
Yeah. That's so powerful, though. I mean, not everyone can see those choices so clearly or as clearly as you clearly saw them.
You know, and being a parent is a beautiful thing. And then, you know, like you said, to lose a baby, it's a lot of women out here who lose children and they never get help and they stay disconnected. And a disconnect from loss is horrible. And years later, I had a baby. Well, he's 5 years old now, Caleb.
And we see him in the film.
Yes, and I also have a one-year-old everybody doesn't really know about. He kind of snuck in at the end.
After we finished shooting.
Sometimes, is that right?
Yeah.
Malachi, and it's kind of like God gave my baby back.
You feel like Sean is back in a way.
Yes, and, you know, new love replaces things and hurt, and it doesn't take Sean's place. I think about him, you know, during times of year, you know, anniversaries, birthdays, you can't help but to remember. But that was like, I could say, one of the most difficult times in my life.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then having to struggle with having new children, you deal with symptoms from trauma. Post-traumatic stress disorder is serious.
You know, I have to say, and there are many joyful and fun and funny parts of the film, but one does get... And I think the two of you represent this, and there are others as well, is that for some kids, life is just so hard and so loveless, if I can put it that way. I'm looking at you, Darlene. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just it's a reminder that for a lot of kids growing up, they're kind of alone in the world.
Yeah. Yes, and thinking about Darlene made me think about why it was so important for me to be a good mother to my daughter. You know, if I had let myself fall apart because of all the things I've been through, not that I didn't have my moments, Lord, I'd be lying. But I fought through it because of her, because I knew that she needed a chance. You know, I thought about, I didn't want her to be in the system like I was or having to deal with those things. Mm-hmm. And she's going to have to find her own way and learn her own things, but
sure.
She won't have to go through that.
The foster care system.
None of my children will. And it's a lot of good foster parents out there. It's a lot of good people. You know, I have a godmother who was actually one of the staff who used to work in the program, who I don't get a chance to mention, who's still in my life and is involved with my children. So, you know, you God does give you other people.
Right.
So it's just like, we just got to choose to live. And we got to fight.
And Darlene, I mean, we heard you talking to God, you know, asking God, in a sense, why me? How do you think about God today?
With that, why me? I say, why not me? Now, it was painful at the time, but I went through it. And that's the key, through it. I didn't stay there. And sometimes when you go through abuse, yeah, you might physically grow, but you get stuck at, you heard me say, age 11.
Right.
You know, my trauma started before 11, but it ended at 11. Because at 11, I got my angel, which is my mother now that's in heaven. But she helped. She didn't abuse me. She became my mother. And even in the movie, I say guardian for the abuse person. And I say mom for my angel.
Interesting. Yeah. Words matter, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, they do.
A lot.
Yes, they do.
What was it like for you, Glenn, to hear these really powerful stories?
Well, you know, because of the workshop process, I heard a lot of them informally. So I knew that the depth of the stories and the sort of creativity. But I have to tell you that, you know, you cross your fingers, you show up with a crew. Like that Darlene improv session, I wasn't sure it was going to go on. I knew that we were going to have her, Rachel was going to do her nails. I tried to create an environment that felt as intimidating as possible. But, you know, we had to turn the radio off, and then suddenely they're quiet, and it feels a little unusual. It feels like
right.
a performance. So there's those moments where you just sort of take a deep breath with everybody. And I just feel like because, especially the crew, we had a DP, Daniel Traub, we had a sound technician, Andy Weinrich, and we had Leah, associate producer, and Will Arore, who was associate director. We all became very close. So I don't feel like Darlene and Rachel felt like they were telling something that they wouldn't tell to a friend. And I think that's probably because
Darlene's nodding her head, yes.
It took so long to raise the money to finish this movie. I think that was part of one of the blessings
and
of that challenge.
And even though, like, you know, talking about the things that we wanted to talk about specifically in the movie, Glenn was new to hearing it, but I wasn't.
Right.
A lot of times, personally, having a personal relationship with, not a personal relationship, a professional work relationship, but hearing, talking to the members about their personal stories, or sometimes doing people here, they might bust out crying, or they may have a conversation about something that's going on, or just having general conversation. Me and Darlene have a lot in common because she lost a baby as well. So we already had that conversation up. She already knew the things that I shared. So it was a comfortability amongst us, which probably, you know, it may have been a little awkward to Glenn, but I think that's what was important, that we already had that bond
sure.
and understanding. And also, you know, like confidentiality, nobody talked about people's business, and there was a trust in place. You know, and we supported each other.
Well, it's interesting, Glenn, that you mentioned the fact that this took, what, about 4 years to from start to finish. And I'm sure as a filmmaker, you know, you want to, in a sense, get it done and get the money in and all of that. But it led to something what sounds like a little different, perhaps unusual.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we're all very close. And the movie took 4 years to make. It's been taking about a year to sort of share with the world. And we go to screenings together. And I feel like the bond is still very tight. We look to each other to sort of explain the different roles. But I do want to say that the beauty parlor is this place, like when you go through, Rachel says everyone has a right to live a happy life in the film. And that's kind of a feeling you get there. She gives permission for people to be themselves. And while there are tears, there's also a lot of laughter and a lot of humor and a lot of color. And I think that's that special combination where people don't feel like they're going in for medicine. They're going in for some sort of soul fill, you know, for lack of a better word.
And is it unusual to work so closely with people and perhaps have them edit parts of the film or sort of collaborate in a different kind of way?
Absolutely. I mean, I said to the group before, very early on, and this is something I've never done before, and it kind of breaks all filmmaker rules. I said, you have absolute control.
Right.
There's going to be nothing in this movie that you don't want in the movie. And one of the great joys was after we finished the filming period, we had about 4 sessions at the editing room, I would say. We packed everybody into this tiny editing room, and our editor, Ann Technell, who was a fantastic editor and a great human being, would show scenes to people, and we would get their blessing. And it was very important to me that we had the thumbs up from everybody, which It worked. I'm happy to say it worked out without a lot of tension.
But you're saying in certain ways breaking some of the rules of filmmaking.
Oh, yeah.
You're the filmmaker, right?
Well, not really.
Not on this film, right?
In fact, there's a term at NHS, and I think it's in the recovery movement. It's called the guide on the side. Is that
recovery guide?
A recovery guide. Yeah. So they call themselves the guide on the side. And in some ways in the movie making, I felt a little bit like that. Like I know how to make a movie, and I know what the potential is, but I was sort of helping people with suggestions and showing them examples of ways to go down a storytelling path. And that was the same in post-production, too. I mean, if someone said, that can't be in there, I would have said, all right, it's not. But luckily nobody did.
So does that change the way you might be making your next film?
Actually, yes. Yes. I mean, I think the collaborative thing has a lot of power to it. And, I mean, there are certain stories that don't need that kind of creative collaboration.
Right.
If I'm telling a story from history or something like that, you know, you sort of do your homework and you make the movie. But when you're dealing with human lives, and especially when you're dealing with the depth of human, you know, human struggle and triumph, I really think this movie is a story about triumph. But you have to have a trust, and you have to have people feel like they're not handing their story to you, but they're sort of sharing it with you, and you're carrying it together.
Well, let's take another short break. A question, when will the film be shown in South Jersey or Philadelphia? Well, you're in luck. It's going to be shown at the Acme Screening Room in Lambertville, New Jersey. Not exactly South New Jersey, but not too far. Mm-hmm. And that's Sunday
at 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m. Also, a comment from Eileen, heart opening. Thank you for the courage to tell your story, a story we must hear and must become active to work towards change. Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about this documentary called Hollywood Beauty Salon. And it features two of our guests here, Rachel Hollywood Carr-Timms and Darlene Holmes Malone. And you have heard clips from the film of both of them talking a bit about their lives. And Glenn Holston is the filmmaker. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Just a recap here, especially if you're just joining us. As we all know, many of us go to our salon or a barbershop for more than a shave and a haircut. We go for conversation and sometimes even shared intimacies. The Hollywood Beauty Salon at the Germantown Recovery Center in Philadelphia is a place where people with depression and schizophrenia, bipolar disorders can be themselves, where they can share stories and have their hair done and be understood. That's what this new documentary is about, Hollywood Beauty Salon. It was workshopped at the beauty parlor over the course of 4 years. Talking to the director, Glenn Holston, two women profiled in the film, salon operator Rachel Hollywood Carr-Timms and client Darlene Holmes Malone. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Well, I kind of lost the whole strand of how this got started, which was in preparation for the hair recovery show. This is your idea, right, Rachel?
Yeah, we have fashion shows annually at the program we have since we've been at Armand Street. And sometimes it would be something like just a fashion show for Christmas time or Valentine's Day or anything that the members, it was always their ideals. They would come to me and we would collaborate and get ideals through our member council at the program. And they said, oh, we want to have a fashion show, so we would plan and, you know, do a date. But the recovery hair show was my ideal because it wasn't just about, our salon never was about just providing a service. I mean, even though the members can get, like, really, really, really cheap hairstyles next to nothing prices.
Sure.
You know, as a donation just for supplies. They could actually, the hair show started, the first one was in the movie. And we've had like two, or we're going on our fourth one. It'll be maybe next year. And so it's been annually where people tell their stories and really it's about their stories and coming up and being a spokesperson for the other members in the program and modeling their hair. And they walk down the runway. You should just see the confidence in.
I was going to say, talk about walking the catwalk, right? What was it like for you, Darlene?
Walking the catwalk?
Yeah, walking the catwalk.
I was a star.
Yes.
And I am a star.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, did that help you feel like a star to be able to walk with
with your look and your yes. confidence?
I mean, because you see, you know, on TV and you see the fashion out there, and you know, but, you know, it's TV, but I've actually done it. So I know what it's like to do, to walk the walk, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I am that star.
Let me get Sonia from, looks like Doylestown, to join our conversation. Hi, Sonia. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
I had the honor of meeting your guests at the Doylestown County Theater a month ago or so, and I just wanted to give a shout-out about seeing the movie and just bring home the point that these are strong, beautiful people who have voices that can benefit everyone. Although the movie is based in the sphere of mental health, it really is a story about human beings.
Yeah.
And so thank you very much.
Sonia, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say,
Rachel? Thank you, Sonia. I think I remember her. I remember her voice. I remember talking to her. I just wanted to say that, you know, change is a process involving actions that lead to results. So one of my main reasons for I always like to mention this for the movie. When I thought about telling my story, it was very scary for me.
I bet.
You know, in my culture, we have this thing that I wish would go away where we, like, we don't tell our business. And it's like I broke all the rules. But I felt like I saw the impact that sharing my personal story had on the members, because it peer support is big in the recovery motto. And it's not about just going and, like, telling your business, like, girl, you know, this and that happened, but it's about sharing your story to influence or empower somebody that they can get through it, because you're a living example. And most of the time it's past things. So that motto and that mindset is, okay, I have mental health challenges. I went through this or I went through that. So let me share this with you to try to empower you and encourage you. Mm-hmm. And the members or people in general are receptive to that. Because how many times has somebody went to the doctors and they're like, oh, well, I have this or I have that. And they're like, they don't know what I'm talking about because they don't go through this or they don't, you know. I remember being younger and thinking, these people don't have depression. They don't know what I'm talking about. So it made me be more tight-lipped with asking for help because I didn't think that the professionals understood.
Oh, interesting.
So having somebody that works in the program that, you know, some we have people called peer specialists who are people in recovery who are coming back and working who have been, you know, got to a good place in their life and want to come and give back. And stigma is very big in our society. People have so many judgments. We're all human beings. Stop with all the titles and the judgment. It's so important because people are afraid to get help because they're afraid of being judged.
One of the things we were talking about before going on the air is just while it's difficult to talk about mental health challenges, and as you were just saying, Rachel, there's a lot of stigma and taboo, and yet it's so common. I mean, I said mm-hmm. in my family there are people that have had all sorts of mental health challenges, and Glenn, you were saying the same thing. I mean, it's so common.
Yeah.
And I hate how the world talks about mental health challenges like it's something that you can catch or a disease. It's something that can happen to people that are born with it, but it's also something that can develop from going through drama. I didn't have no mental health challenges when I was born, but right. I sure went through HELL and developed a lot of things just from the way my life went, right. You know? So it's just about being real and true to ourselves. And I'm just reaching out to everybody out in the world. If you have something that you want to talk to somebody about it and go get help because it's important.
You want to answer that, yeah. And then we'll get a caller in.
Yes.
When Caroline?
It's strength going to go get help. You know, nobody knows what's wrong with you unless you tell them. If you get a good doctor or whatever in the eye contact, let them know, you know, because there is strength in asking for help. And the stigma is being broke. And, you know, it's time to stop being quiet about mental illness. Mm. It's not a secret anymore.
Let me see what Chris from, looks like Paoli has to say. Hi, Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
What a fantastic show.
Thank you.
I'm so inspired and can't wait to meet these great people and come to the salon. And I just wanted to say that this is something that I've been thinking about for a while because a friend of mine's daughter had some significant depression issues and she had addiction issues that went along with it. And it's been a secret, and they don't want to tell anybody about it. But if that same daughter had cancer or any other type of disease, our community would be rallying around them, doing fundraisers and things like that. But unfortunately, in our society, I keep hearing the word stigma on the show. There is such a stigma associated with mental illness, addiction, and things like that. And I think it's so wonderful that you all have come forward and have shown this film, and I just hope you know how many people you are going to impact, help, and I bet you won't even know it, that you are saving lives by doing what you're doing.
That's really nice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for calling in. Glenn, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I feel like one of the goals of this film was to make a movie about people and not a movie about diagnoses. And I think we are successful in that. And we, thanks to the generosity of the men and women in the film. And I should say it's like a whole cast. It's like six main stories. Rachel and Darlene are among the players in the film. But because we have that approach, it's a kind of an invitation to discuss these things. So we're sort of lured in by the beauty and the fun of the hair recovery show. And then suddenly you find yourself, you know, crying with Rachel or very, very touched with Darlene and Mr. Gazemple trying to play that flute. And, you know, you're just cheering him on. And so all these emotional connections happen. And I tried to build entry points for people into the movie. So if you don't connect with one story, there might be another one that you respond to.
And it's hard to imagine not connecting with these stories, but that's a whole other thing.
And, you know, I come across so many different types of people and members and stories. You'd be surprised. And I feel like the movie was beautifully portrayed because everybody is unique and different. And that's one of the main things that the city of Philadelphia needs to know about the whole recovery process is that everybody's journey is different. So what happened with me will not happen with you. Hopefully it may be better than my process was. And maybe it won't be, but we're all fighting and struggling together. And you know, you come to Germantown Recovery Community, you can get some hope and a haircut.
And hope and a haircut, I like
that. It's like, you know, it's a very, very unique process. And it's help out there if you do need help, you know, and start off small. Like, nobody's asking you to come go to your local recovery center and just go tell your whole life because you heard this radio interview. But if you know personally you have some challenges and get help, then you'll see how meaningful your life is.
But you also see that because it's filmed over a 4-year period, but that recovery takes time. That you can, you know, there are times when it's not. It's possible, and there are times when it's. I'm sure, Darlene, it's a struggle as well.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, because at one time I was not a person to easily cry in front of someone. You know, the day that we did my scene, did I know I was going to cry that day? If I know, would I have shown up? No.
You didn't want to cry.
No, but I knew I had to. You know, I had to release it. And like I said, with me closing my eyes, it helped. With me taking my glasses off, it helped. Which I can't see a thing without my glasses. So
that helped.
Yes.
But it's interesting to think about, you know, and I'm sure you've done this. You've gone back to, and in a sense, the film is about, Darlene, you're also your child self. Mm-hmm. I mean, we see a girl playing you, which is imagining what your life turned into when you were 11 years old. Could you imagine where you are today?
No, not at all. If you had told me at 11 when I was in all that hurt and pain, no. Because when I was 11, I was angry, bitter, evil.
Evil?
Yes, evil. Meaning? Because I was mean. If you ask me, if you were looking at me, I'm going to ask you every knee, what you looking at?
Oh, just looking at you, you would have said that
You
to
wouldn't
me.
Even have to say anything because I was like that. If we met eye contact, it was what you looking at. Now you look at me, I'm going to give you a smile.
Right.
Totally night and day, different person.
Yeah. How about for you, Rachel?
I never knew that I would even be down this path in life, but I don't regret any choices or decisions that I made, and I hope that I can help somebody. And for me, the movie has helped me grow a great deal because I'm meeting hundreds of individuals who encourage me. You got to think at that program, one of our oldest members may be about 85 years old.
Wow.
So imagine the things that she has experienced and seen. I've also seen a lot of members because we have older adults that have passed away. But they lived their life. You know, I want to make it to be 85 years old and see my great-grandchildren. You know, so it's just like they empower me and inspire me so much because they had been through so much because they came up with mental health challenges during the time where it wasn't the appropriate help. And people forget that there's still people out here who need to be rehabilitated from the old rehabilitation. Just going forward, like, I wouldn't change anything, and I'm glad that I met the people who I met. I'm glad that I chose NHS to work at almost 10 years ago. I just want people just to be empowered. And when it was very hard for me to share a lot of my stories, because, like I said, in our culture, it's like you don't talk about certain things, you know, even though they happen.
I think it's more than culture, too.
Right.
I think it's just country.
Right. And that's what I mean by our culture. I mean, like, American culture.
Right.
You know, and also I mean, like, African-American culture. We're taught not to tell if somebody touch you. You know, man, how sad is that? You know, our children are innocent. We're supposed to protect them. So why we tell them don't say nothing when their dads are molesting them or their uncles or, you know, their mom's boyfriend or a cousin or a family member or a neighbor? We got to teach people to speak up and speak out. Because it's set that era still. I come across people who still haven't shared about things that have happened with them,
yeah.
And they wound up being damaged adult. So yeah, just it helped me a great deal as well. And being I don't want to say I'm an example. I just want people to just learn from what I've been through.
Sure. Sure. Let me read some comments here. Tweet from Marjorie. Powerful show today. What brave women. Tweet from Mr. C. Love the acceptance and well of strength in vulnerability. Comment from a listener in Bucks County. How do you get help for someone that has mental health problems, but they don't want to get help? And we've frankly done whole shows about that very issue. But it's, you know,
one of the
that
things
can be
I can say about, you know, Ms. Melissa's comment is that a person, when they're ready, it'll happen. Sometimes if it's a person who's with schizophrenia, if they're going through an episode where they're, you know, they're not compliant with what you may want them to do, sometimes just take something to happen. Sometimes to come across the right person, the right doctor, might be coming across me. It might be coming across one of the other staff members in my program or another program. Some kind of connect that will happen eventually. And when that person is ready, you can't start any process without being ready.
Yeah. We're almost out of time here, Glenn. I mean, this has been such an interesting project for you. Obviously, the 4 years that it took to make it, and now it's being shown here and there. It was shown out in California, I think New York as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the life of this film as you look into your crystal ball?
Well, you know, it's still vibrant and exciting. I mean, we're sharing it everywhere. My little secret passion is to have it shown in beauty parlors, and I want to make a book about the experience, and I want people to be able to watch scenes while they're getting their hair done, and I want it to be a conversation starter. So 2017 is the year that the book Lessons from the Hollywood Beauty Salon will come out.
Oh, terrific.
But also in the spring, we're going to do a big national campaign where people will be able to download the film and have it shown in their community. So that's if you folks connect to our website, HollywoodBeautySalonMovie.com, you know, you can sign up for that, and we'll tell you all about that. Because I really feel like culturally, people are really ready to talk about this, and this film is a wonderful entry point into a discussion.
Well, it's a wonderful film. You're a terrific guest. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Rachel Hollywood Carr Timms and also Darlene Holmes Malone for joining us today, featured in this film, Hollywood Beauty Salon. And Glenn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Big pleasure.
And I should add that you can see this film if you get yourself to Lambertville, New Jersey, to the Acme Screening Room at 5 o'clock.
On Sunday.
And that HollywoodBeautySalonMovie.com. Again, that's the address to get more information. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, how to download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. We did take some pictures as well. I'm sure they are posted or will be posted on our Facebook page. I'm Artie Moscowen. Thanks for joining us.